Hey, thanks.
Thanks.
We were moving up from Texas to Columbus, Ohio.
So it's not an easy commute. In the morning, it's a tough, tough thing to navigate the traffic.
And I get car sick very easily.
And that summer was amazing.
The whole nine yards. It was the whole nine yards.
Home is kind of wherever my body is. You know, it's like have body, will travel.
And that summer was amazing because I...
Welcome to Hitchhiking Off the Map. This is Conrad Bishop.
And Elizabeth Fuller.
And we're broadcasting again from under our redwood tree and our Monterey pines and our plum tree and a whole lot of strange scraggly things in Sebastopol, California. We'll be here every week unless you get tired of the visit or until we croak.
We have an album of voices and stories from friends.
And some are true to life and some are truer than life. And what they're about, trips and transformations.
Not in the sense of the AAA or the whatever you call it guide that shows you every trash can on the corner.
We do not know where to get the best fried squid.
Well, you do.
We won't tell you.
I do.
Okay. We all know that Red Riding Hood went to visit Grandma and, you know, what route she took. But we're more interested here in how did that affect her subsequent relationships.
What about your own trip to visit Grandma? We'd like to get stories from you. So visit our website and send us a story. We're at www.independenteye.org. Okay, Bill and JC.
JC is a poet. She writes and teaches. Her husband Bill is an emergency room physician, and he also teaches. Two very different people under one roof in Philadelphia. I asked them, what trips do you remember as a kid?
It was the first time that we went away from home overnight to Orient Point on Long Island, and we drove through the potato fields. The scent was just extraordinary. It was like potatoes almost, but green. There were miles of potato fields, and we stayed in a rooming house. And in the middle of the night, I had to go to the bathroom, so my mom had to take me down the stairs with a little, like a lantern or a candle, or a flashlight maybe, through a kitchen garden to the outhouse. And when we walked through the kitchen garden, there was this sound, and I thought I could hear the potatoes growing underground.
Well, we didn't travel a lot, but whenever my uncle would come to visit for about 5 weeks in the summertime. He liked covered bridges and trains, and I liked trains. And so we would travel around to the various sites in the area where there were trains, and we would go take rides on narrow gauge trains. And we did go to Gettysburg once. That was interesting.
All of these summer trips, which I remember little fragments of, and I remember like the dense green and how cold the lakes were. I really don't remember what we did. But what I really remember is this like dense green and cool, and a peach I ate once, huge and really juicy. It's so strange because they're just tiny fragments and no stories connected with them. They're all like images and more about scent and color than anything else. I don't even remember what things felt like.
And that's why she's a poet? How about your first time away from home alone?
Oh yeah, in Girl Scouts. Let's see. We camped out overnight at an old estate. I forget who had built the estate, but they had a reptile building where they used to keep alligators, crocodiles, terrible snakes. And then they would have these huge parties during the Depression. And they would be serving cocktails on these little bridges over the reptile pits. So you'd be drinking your martinis over crocodiles. Of course, the reptile pits were empty. They were just concrete pits by then. But I remember that because it was really hard to sleep. I kept thinking that, you know, all these reptile ghosts would come back.
Camp was the time that I went away. It was interesting being away. I mean, I always found it curious that it was traumatic. Not bad, but I mean, my parents would come to visit, like at scout camp, in the middle of the week, and they would leave, and I was tearful for a while. I mean, I was only gone for a week, you know. I mean, this is not like major separation stuff. And I guess I understood that I just missed them, but it was just interesting that I was experiencing this tearfulness. I thought, gee, this is interesting.
And then when I would come home from college, which wasn't often, but like for holidays, there would be friction. And then by the time I was probably out of that, my mother had died. And so then everything was different. It was not my childhood home anymore. It was the Margaret Eleanor Johnston Cooper Mausoleum, where nothing could be moved. The ashtray had to stay there. So that was a trip, because I would come home and everything would be the same in the most frightening way. And then no one would sit on the couch, which was where my mom had sat. There was this just like big empty cushion. So I guess that was a journey, you know, back into a place that had been childhood and now was, it was a preserved place, like salted meat.
We've known each of these people longer, I think, than they've known each other. But it wasn't until this visit that I realized how different they are, the way they look at the world and their own inner workings.
When I was in college, I really didn't take too many humanities courses except what I was required. But once I hit medical school, the humanities courses I had in medical school were taught by extraordinary teachers. And so I guess I started get in touch with my emotional self in a way that I hadn't before. I was so I took a year off and I did all this research and I worked very hard. But what I experienced through that year was that I learned how emotion played a very big role in what happened to you. And at the end of the year, even though I had worked extraordinarily hard and gotten a lot done, and I felt I had, you know, accomplished something, but I didn't feel satisfied. I didn't feel whole in some way. And I really didn't have anybody to talk to about it. Although I did start getting interested in music, very interested in music at that time. What I think was a phenomenal thing happened. I was up on the pathology floor working, and every night I would come out, there'd be this young fellow mopping the floor. I guess, I don't know, maybe the fifth or sixth time I saw him, I stopped and I turned around and I looked at him and I said, "Do you work here?" Foolish question, the guy works here, was obviously working. "Yeah, I work here." And I said, literally, "What do you do?" And he said, "I study music at the Royal Academy of Music in London." And that, I mean, my jaw just dropped, and we talked music for 5 hours from that point. That was one of the most extraordinary experiences in my life. And I don't know why I asked him that question, but I did. I continued to do my work as I was, but every night, or most every night after he was done work, why we would talk music. So I felt like I started to come alive in a way that I had not ever done before. That whole year was a transitional experience. It answered the question that I didn't want to do bench research, even though I did it very well. It wasn't satisfying. It really came down to how I felt about it. It didn't feel right, so I didn't do it. I went on to the next step.
I wanted to travel. I had great ideas, and I didn't do it at really almost at all until I was in my 40s. And we began with a trip to Mexico. We had thought we would get married, and then we couldn't figure out if that was a smart thing. And then we thought, well,
why bother to get married? We'll just go to Mexico. It seemed like a perfect alternative. And we were there just about 10 days. It was really very toury ruins. We had been to the light and sound show at the temples, which was really a horror, with a lot of strange music and, you know, pink gel, green gel light thrown on the temples. The Mayans, you know, must be ready for revenge, you know, arming themselves against this display. So we left it and we walked down this little dirt path. And out of this sort of scrub jungle path, every man was short, I was a tall person there, appeared and asked us if we wanted to see something. And we said yes, and went off behind him in the jungle. I have no idea who he was. He was a guide. There were a lot of guides there. But that was the assumption we made. And he led us down this little path that was very rocky. Again, the sense of narrowing, the bushes coming in, coming in, coming in, coming in. And then we could hear this drip, 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 drip. And he took us to the old cenote, the water hole of Chichen Itza, but not the Chichen Itza of power, where the temple and throne room had been built, but the old Chichen, Chichen Viejo. And it was the place where the peasants who grew agave and just whatever they, just basic foods for themselves, subsistence, where they had worshipped. The cenote was right at the base of a huge cave. And in the middle of the night, not knowing who this person was, hardly able to understand him, my husband and I just, well, not husband, unmarried, followed him into this cave till it narrowed again so much that we couldn't pass. And then he did something that I probably shouldn't even say, but he broke a little stalactite off and he handed it to us. And he said, for when you get married. It was so curious. You know, all of these things I'm telling you about are really, now that I think about it, I'm going into these places of mystery. I mean, to me, that give me a window into some kind of parallel world below the world I live in, a world that's dark and rich compared to this pretty pale life that I live. It feels like I'm finding my heart. I almost said soul, but it isn't that. It's very in the body. So it feels like I'm finding my heart on these things. Like in a way I'm being shown things, but like by whom? Or stumbling maybe is better. I'm very good at that. Stumbling into these things, and then there's nothing in my mind that makes sense of them.
And now they journey together, long distances and short distances. A lot to South America. Bill is studying tropical medicine. And their stories of travel together are rich, but also their private journeys.
So the second night I slept at this campground that's on the rim of the canyon. That day I took a walking tour of the canyon. To go in, you have to be accompanied by a Navajo guide. It's Navajo land. And then we came up out of the canyon. We had been walking most of the day. And I was very tired and went to sleep early that night. But before I went to sleep, I had gone down to the washroom. And someone there had said, don't sleep with the windows in your van open. There are hobos in this camp. And while they won't hurt you, they can be very unsettling. And I slept really soundly. And at some point in the middle of the night, I heard laughing. Young people laughing. And girls, a lot of that high girl laugh. And then that low, high laugh of adolescent boys, where the voice has no place. And it goes uncontrollably everywhere. And I raised myself up on the elbow to look out the dusty window. And I was thinking that it was this group of Germans who were camped at the next campsite. And as I raised myself up to look, I felt a hand on my shoulder. And it was holding me back. So I couldn't get up to look. And I didn't know, well, I'm not sure what I thought, but I felt very frightened. And then I looked, and I could see the hand. I could see the fingernails. And I felt that I had to struggle. And not to protect myself, but so I could get up and see these young people passing. The laughing, the light talking is continuing, and I can hear their feet in the dust. They're going by the van, and I really want to see them. So I turn my head to bite the hand, and then I wake up and it's morning. It was not a dream, though. And I drive that day, and I'm driving, and it begins to occur to me that the hand was protecting me. That whatever the boys and girls were, whoever they were, whatever time they were in, I would have been hurt in some way if I had seen them. That was an experience that was more than I could bear. It wasn't the Germans going to the bathroom. It was the boys and the girls of somewhere else. And there was some way that I fell into that and was about to insert myself into it where I didn't belong. I wasn't ready to belong. Maybe I never will be. But that was the moment when it occurred to me that I could make myself ready. For what? And I began to read, to meditate a little bit. I mean, it was a big change in my life. And now I have a word for what it is. And it's a Sanskrit word. And the word is ka. And it means who. And it also means the place where sky and land come together, which in English we call the horizon, but they call it who. Yeah.
And what happens, guys, when you face your moment of making, of doing, being in the journey? Bill? Dr. William Shove?
It's true. Every time you walk in the door, you don't know what you're going to face. You don't know what's happening. It is totally new. I really feel that when I walk in the room, I may not know what is going on when in the final analysis, but I know I'm going to be able to deal with whatever is there, and I'm going to be able to help this person. I walk in with that confidence. And it's a problem-solving situation. So I walk in, I see what I see. How is the patient? How do they look? How quickly do I need to move? Do I need to move within the next minute to do something that's going to help them or maybe save their life? I have to size all that up. And I don't think that is difficult to do. But I think you have to be really focused to do it well.
And the times you take the walk down the hall with news that is not good.
Well, I've done it a lot. I always take somebody with me because I know that I can't be in the room long because I have too many other responsibilities. But I know that I don't want to give the bad news, have the family crash, and walk out on them. So I always take somebody with me. And so when I walk in, I'm very matter of fact. I shake everybody's hand in the room and ask them how they're related. And within the first 30 seconds, I tell them the person is dead. I don't mince words. Because I feel that that's cruel. I want them to know immediately what happened. And and I've said to people, well, you know, your husband passed away, and they start to talk to me, and I realize they don't get it. And then I say, he died. And then it's mayhem. They just fall apart. That's been my experience on many occasions. Usually people understand the word passed away. That's the word I like to use. And if they don't get that, then I'm more blunt. And then I tell them what happened. And if they were at all involved in the care, I tell them they did the right thing. Because I don't want them to have any feeling that they somehow didn't do the right thing. It's somehow they contributed to the death of their loved one. Sometimes I've had to call somebody at home and say, you know, this is maybe after their person. We finally found out how to reach them, and this might be like 10 minutes after the person died. I say, well, you know, your husband isn't doing too well. I think you better come to the hospital. And maybe you better get somebody to drive you. You know, you understand. They understand right away. That, you know. And then when they get there, I say, well, here's what happened in the meantime. Because I don't like to tell people over the phone. I've done that once in my life, and I really hated that. And that's because somebody was across state lines. I couldn't get the state police. I didn't have an address. It was awful. It was awful.
I realized, well, is it okay to make judgments about your friends? I realized that their journeys were all makings. And maybe, I don't know, their attraction for each other was to their energy as makers. For Bill, it's making a healing or making music. For JC, it's making poems.
When I travel, though I wander, it's a pretty safe kind of wandering. Even though it seems adventurous, the Andes, the jungle, you know, but it really isn't. I think when I start a poem, I know exactly where I'm going for about 10 seconds. And then I'm completely lost. There's no way to ask directions. There's nothing. And sound comes out. It comes out, you know, in these little marks on the paper. But in my ears, it is always sound, 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 sound. It isn't until later when the sound is down, like a score, and I can look at it a little bit, maybe like I'm translating at that point. And then it becomes slowly a poem. My daughter is a rock climber, and though she doesn't do ice work, she does do a lot of hanging on by her fingertips and her toes. And that's probably the closest I can come to a picture for how I write a poem. I'm probably hanging on by the tip of my tongue, by my ear bones.
Is there a danger in the journey?
Oh, there's a terrible danger. And the danger is that my assumptions will be cut to shreds. They always are. And so all these little tiny boundaries, you know, that feel like little protections, when you write, you're cutting them out from under you one at a time. You don't even know you are. Then you're standing on air.
In Philadelphia, we were talking to J.C. Todd and William Shove.
This is Hitchhiking Off the Map. And we hope you'll be moved to contribute a story of your own. Visit our website at www.independenteye.org. I is EYE, and drop us an email.
And hey, go out after your own friends. Get them to tell you their stories, whether you've got a tape recorder or not. It was just amazing to me working on editing the story with JC and Bill. They're both friends, but I found out depths about them. Just heart stuff, not just facts. Heart stuff. You know, we're all incredible. We're amazing. So why do we wait for Hollywood to tell us who we are? We should tell our own stories.
Well, this next story is a true story, but we have to be truthful and say it wasn't a cat. It was a dog. But we changed it because it's very hard to imagine with no stairs how you get a dog up into the attic.
It was a puppy.
It was a puppy. But for this story, our thanks to our box office friend in Pittsburgh. This is Cat in the Attic.
Well, didn't you hear me?
I was asleep.
I was yelling my head off. I like to die up there.
Well, you should have waked me up. I'd have got the cat out of the attic.
Well, you were asleep.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, I didn't know. The cat's up in the attic, and I get the ladder and heave myself up there. Only it's the short ladder, and I can't get back down. I was there for 3 hours, damn it.
I was asleep.
I yelled and screamed. Didn't you see the note?
I didn't know what it meant.
It said, I'm in the attic. I can't get out. What else would it mean?
It's on the cat's collar.
I figured you'd see the cat, so I put the note on its collar and threw it down out of the attic.
Yeah, I saw it. The damn thing climbed onto my face, woke me up.
I just about died up there.
Well, I was asleep. How am I supposed to hear her if I'm asleep? She's telling me, you look tired, take a nap. Then what are you doing asleep? You can't win.
So the cat wakes him up. He reads, I'm in the attic, and he says, well, now you're out, and throws the cat down and goes back to sleep. Nobody will ever believe that one.
That's our trips for this week. Next week, we follow a wild woman on a bus into the upper 70s, miles per hour, and years of life.
Travel Thought for the Week from Walt Whitman. Henceforth, I whimper no more, postpone no more, need nothing. Done with indoor complaints, libraries, querulous criticisms. Strong and content, I travel the open road.
Hitchhiking Off the Map is a production of The Independent Eye. For CDs of our shows or to contribute stories, visit our website. Here it is again, www.independenteye.org, and you spell I-E-Y-E. We'd be happy to send you information on the Hitchhikers Guild, which supports this show, along with funds from the National Endowment for the Arts. This is Elizabeth Fuller
and Conrad Bishop, offering the disclaimer that hitchhiking is entirely at your own risk, like life. So stay sane, but not too much.
We'd run for the tunnel because it would be really cool there. But then when we'd run out of the tunnel, all these petunias were planted. And you'd be running into heat and this sort of scent of sweet pepper.